The upcoming talk is done by Frank. He has delivered the first episode of that yesterday already. Yesterday he focused on the first part of the title, why we are addicted to lithium. Today he's going to focus on the second part and how we shake that habit. Frank is actually working in the science department of the news magazine, the online news magazine Golem. In case you've missed it, go see part one as well. It's recorded. And now, all the best and enjoy the talk. Frank, stage is yours.
Thanks. And of course, there are lots of heralds that also really help with the talks. And I thank Katzenfreund for being my herald today. Yes. Okay. Yesterday, I talked about lithium-ion batteries and why we became addicted to lithium. So what can we do about it? And I already hinted that we are going to talk about sodium. And last year, one of the big announcements was that CATL, CATL, I used to call them CATL, which is the Chinese company, Contemporary Amprex Technologies, announced that they will produce sodium ion batteries. And they will produce them starting in 2 years. They're starting to build up all the infrastructure, all the factories that they need to actually build these batteries. In terms of the cells, that has been developed. As guys like Elon Musk like to say, prototypes are easy, production is hard. So production takes a little bit longer, but they will come. And what they announced was a battery that has 160 watt hours per kilogram, was fast charging, retained a lot of the capacity, even in cold temperatures, much more than most other batteries. They're more heat resistant and they're also safer than lithium ion batteries. They use no lithium, no cobalt, nickel, graphite, no copper, and they're much cheaper. And a lot of people just rubbed their eyes and thought, what is going on? Is that, can that be true? And the point is, yes, it is. It is true. And in fact, it's not even possible to build such batteries, but it has been done a long time ago. First examples of the same kind of construction of batteries, even though they were worse, a little bit worse then, was done in the United States, funded by the ARPA-E project, that's the Department of Energy, that funded the development for $2.9 million, not much money, and that was done in 2012 to 2016, and they developed the exact same kind of battery, even though it only had 20% less capacity. Was quite stable, could last over 1,000 cycles, many more than 1,000 charge cycles. So very nice technology indeed. It's just that, well, they then went on and funded a company called Novasis and tried to sell it, and they didn't find any investors or buyers. And that was that. Similar story happened with lithium iron phosphate that we talked about in the last talk. That was also invented and completely developed in the United States, and nobody really cared. There are also other companies, and I listed them here on the slide, like Ferrarion, which is certainly one of the biggest, also Tiamat and Altris. Altris has the chance to become one of the biggest. They also developed similar chemistry. And so the problem was never, is the technology there? The problem was always, is there investment? Will there be enough money to actually build those batteries? And CATL is the biggest producer of batteries worldwide. And when they announce they will build these batteries, you can pretty much believe them. They have the money, they have the resources, they know how to do that. also, the technology is very similar to how lithium works. It's really just the same. You have a cathode on the left side and you have an anode on the right side. And when you charge the battery, the sodium ions go from the cathode to the anode, are stored there in the hard carbon. It's hard carbon. It's not graphite. We will talk about that more. And when you discharge it, it goes in the other direction. And the ions go back from the anode to the cathode, and the electrons also go back from the anode to the cathode. Yeah, it's just that you can use the electricity from the electrons that are flowing through the wires for whatever you want to do. Sodium is worse than lithium. It's not the first choice for building a battery because it's slightly worse. It's 3 times heavier than lithium, and it's actually not that bad when you look at the entire thing, because a typical battery weighs about 4 kilograms per kilowatt hour. That's maybe not the best possible battery. It's slightly less than 4 kilograms for the newest kinds of batteries. But the lithium inside is about 130 grams. And if you just replace that by sodium, it would be 300 grams heavier. It's not that much. And also, when you use sodium, you don't need copper. As you have seen on the other slide, both sides are aluminium. Normally, on the right side, with the hard carbon on the anode, you would need copper, because lithium just combines with aluminium and starts to destroy it. So you cannot use aluminium, so you use copper. And copper is much heavier, and so you're saving like 100 or 200 grams of material by replacing it with aluminium. And so the difference is just negligible almost. The big difference is really the voltage. You lose about 0.3 volts, and that's about 10% of the voltage. And voltage is, it's almost the same as energy. It's the energy per electron that is flowing. And so you lose 10% of the energy. And that's a much bigger difference, actually. So all in all, you really lose from the physical properties about 20%, a bit more than 10%. What has been developed from Sharp Labs and also from CATL is a battery using Prussian blue as the cathode. And this cathode has iron as its main, as the atom that the sodium has to react with. And the rest is carbon and nitrogen in a nice crystalline grid that just takes up the sodium, allows it to react with the iron and be extracted from it. And that works just fine. It's just that the structure is fairly large, has a large volume, and that's why it has a low density. Density is about 2 grams per cubic centimeter, and that's quite low for a cathode material. But otherwise, it's quite okay. It's almost the same as lithium iron phosphate. It's just that it takes more space in the battery. The other point that people looked at and were incredulous is, well, they must be promising too much. Batteries charging so fast, it works better in the cold. How is that possible? And the point is, with sodium, because sodium doesn't react so easily with all the stuff around it, the sodium ions can flow easier through the electrolyte, and you get higher ionic conductivity in the same kind of electrolyte, and you use the same kinds of electrolytes. That's how you can charge them faster. Also, the electrolyte that you can use is propylene carbonate, and normally you cannot use a lot of that because it would destroy graphite, and you'd use graphite in the lithium-ion battery as the anode. With sodium, graphite doesn't work. You use graphite because you can put the lithium ions in the layers between the layers of the graphite. But sodium is bigger, and it's too big for graphite, and so you cannot use it. And so you can use you can use the propylene carbonate and just benefit from that because it has much lower melting point, and you can use it at freezing temperatures. And hard carbon is not as regular, and it has been used for the last 20 years, actually in the year 2000 were the first reports of using hard carbon as sodium anodes, and this material is now very reliable, has very long lifetime, very long cycle life. The performance has been improved over the last 20 years ever further, and it's not experimental. It's absolutely sure that this is going to work. Nobody really has any problems with carbon except for some of the performance issues, like lower density. It doesn't have the same density as graphite because as you get not very ordered, graphite is neatly stacked and very well ordered, so it has higher density. The hard carbon does not. And you also get higher first cycle losses. This has been improved recently, but it's not quite up to the standards of graphite. With graphite, you lose about 4 or 5%. With hard carbons, it's more like 10% or so. It used to be 20%, and that's a major reason why the current batteries from Cuttle are much better than the Sharp-Wrap batteries. On the other hand, it's not graphite, so you don't need the high temperatures that you need to make graphite as a synthesis. And you like to have synthesized artificial graphite, not natural graphite, because it has better properties. You can control the properties. Lower temperatures means it's not as energy intensive. It's more environmentally friendly to do this synthesis, and it's also cheaper. The other advantage is it's not neatly stacked. It's an irregular structure. And because it's an irregular structure, you don't have a hard limit as to how many atoms you can store in the structure. And you can actually get beyond the amount of atoms that you could store in graphite. It's just fairly hard to reach that, and it hasn't quite been reached, at least not reliably. CATL is claiming 350 milliamp hours per gram, and that is very similar to what pure graphite would do. Another thing that a lot of people really get wrong, and I mean people like scientists working in battery in the industry as well, they keep saying, well, sodium ion batteries are not good enough for cars. I don't understand why. I really don't. A lot of people talk about that and they never argue with numbers. They just say, well, it's worse than lithium. And because it's worse than lithium, it's obviously not good enough for cars. But when you look at the numbers, you can say, well, it's the same numbers as you would get in a Tesla Model 3, and that's a car that is sold for over $40,000. If it's good enough for a car that costs more than $40,000, you can assume that it's probably good enough for a car, and not just a short-range, very cheap car, but cars in general. The volumetric density that I have here is an estimation because CATL didn't publish that figure, but you can make very plausible assumptions how high you can get the volumetric density. My estimate is about 180 watt hours per liter. If you want details, please ask me in the Q&A. Time is unfortunately very short. Sodium is good enough for cars. By the way, that good enough is not a mistake by me. John Goodenough had a hand in developing the Prussian Blue. He's still working at university and has a research group there. And I believe 2011, when he was about 90 years old, his group published the research on Prussian Blue and that it could be used for a sodium ion battery. It's incredible. John Goodenough is a really despite his old age, he's going to have his 100th birthday next year. Still very active in the community and in the in development. Sodium ion batteries don't just need anodes; they also need cathodes. The cathode is the core of the battery. Actually, that's where all the chemistry happens. And Prussian blue, we talked about this. It has a very decent performance. The material itself, if you only had the cathode material, is 500 watt hours per kilogram in energy density, but it has a low density. It's only 2 grams per cubic centimeter, and that's quite low. The problem with that is you need more volume, and all the gaps in the volume need to be filled with electrolyte. And so you need more electrolyte, and that means it weighs more. And so the ultimate energy density will be worse than if you had a material that has a higher energy density. Also, the cells take a little bit more volume. There's a second material that is very popular. It's vanadium phosphate. Is great for very high power applications. You can charge and discharge at 10C or 20C for thousands of times with that material, but it has a much lower energy density, or somewhat lower energy density, especially at high power, it's much lower. But it works. It has been developed by Tiamat in France, and actually it's originally from the from lithium that has been adapted to sodium. And then there are layered oxides. Layered oxides are the same kinds of materials that you would have in lithium ion batteries, most lithium ion batteries. What is usually used here is manganese. It's not so much nickel based. You can use nickel, and sometimes nickel is used to improve the energy density, but there have been very good results with almost pure manganese oxide with just some stabilizing other materials, and you can get 600 watt hours per kilogram, and some of the best lithium materials only reach about 750. So it's about 80% of what you would get with lithium. But there are some other problems. The problem with sodium is because the sodium ions are bigger than lithium, the structure is somewhat different in the materials, and you can choose. You can choose between either having a material that is very stable and that can reach very high energy densities, but you have to synthesize it in a way where you only have 2/3 of the sodium inside the material, and the rest of the sodium has to come from the outside. And usually when you have a battery, when you have a lithium ion battery, you have all the lithium inside the battery, inside the cathode of the battery when you build the battery, and then you just charge it and move the lithium over to the anode side. When you want to use these sodium poor and very stable materials, then you need to get your sodium from elsewhere. Either you already have it in the anode side, or you put it into some other material. And research has been going on to put it into all sorts of things. The binder that keeps all the powder together, the separator that separates the anode and the cathode, even the conductive carbon. People try to put some sulfur in the conductive carbon and combine it with sodium, so the sodium could be released, and so on. So there's a lot of development going on there to use that. The other way is you have a sodium-rich structure that is somewhat more unstable, only lasts for a few hundred cycles. But what you can do is you can get a structure that is kind of in between, and where you get at least a bit more than 500 watt hours per kilogram. And that is that has been demonstrated already. And Faradion, which is in Great Britain, they have demonstrated a material like that with about 500 watt hours per kilogram. Their batteries are also very safe. The safety of sodium ion batteries is in general much better than lithium ion batteries because the sodium salts disintegrate at higher temperatures. The sodium salts are like the first the first thing that's starting to disintegrate when you heat up a battery. And the problem with that is there's fluorine in these salts, and the fluorine starts to react with the electrolyte around it, and it starts to get increase the temperature of the battery even a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more, and at some point you reach the point where the cathode material itself starts to disintegrate and release oxygen or some other volatile components, and the entire thing starts to heat up and essentially combust. That's a big problem with the NMC materials, nickel manganese carbonate for nickel manganese cobalt for lithium ion batteries, which can be very flammable. It's much less a problem with other materials. One of the other advantages is that you can use propylene carbonate, which is liquid at low temperatures. In lithium-ion batteries, you have to use ethylene carbonate, which has a much higher melting point, only gets liquid at around 30 degrees. So in a very warm summer day, it would be liquid, otherwise it's solid. And you need to mix it with other components that are very volatile, that have turn into gas very easily and are very flammable. And so that's one of the main reasons why lithium-ion batteries can turn into fireballs very quickly. And you don't need those additives here to reduce the melting point, because the melting point's already very low. So that's why the flammability is not quite so bad. The other point in safety is you can discharge a battery, a sodium ion battery, to 0 volts because there's no copper in the current collector. The copper would normally dissolve into the electrolyte, and then next time you start charging it, after you fully discharged it, you would get copper somewhere in the battery, and that somewhere could be absolutely anywhere, and you can get shortcuts and you can absolutely destroy the battery like that. That's why lithium-ion batteries must never be completely discharged. It's very dangerous, actually. There's no problem with that in sodium-ion batteries, and that means you can work on it. You can completely discharge a battery and work on it without having it at 400 or 500 volts or something like that and get shocked by that. So everybody can work on a fully discharged battery, no problem. A very big benefit in terms of safety. Of course, energy density is very important, and a lot of people think that sodium ion batteries, because they're not the highest energy density, will not quite be enough, and they would like to have higher energy density. So there's a possibility, and CATL in their presentation already used this and showed that they are going to develop this, is to simply use both kinds of batteries in one car, in one battery pack. So you use both sodium and lithium ion battery cells. So you can use some cheaper cells, the cheaper sodium ion cells, along with the lithium ion battery cells. And you can get the best of both worlds, especially when it comes to the cold temperature performance. The sodium ion batteries can, you can start driving your car with the sodium ion battery cars, batteries, while you heat up the lithium ion batteries, especially with lithium ion phosphate, which is a technology that is very sensitive to cold temperatures. And when you use both of them together, you have a much better battery pack overall. And in terms of energy density, you can really choose what you want, depending on, and I've done it here with watt hours per kilogram, but it works the same with watt hours per liter, depending on whether your problem is depending on getting small volume or small mass, whatever you want. And so if you choose 75% sodium, you can get a slight increase in energy density. If you just want to, if you just give up on 10 watt hours per kilogram, so you go from 170 watt hours per kilogram to 160, you can save 25% of the lithium in the battery pack. It's absolutely possible to save a lot of lithium that way, and especially when the lithium supply is tight, this can be very important. The materials used, especially this is again for the CATL battery, is aluminium, iron, carbon, nitrogen, carbon, hydrocarbon, and some phosphorus and fluorine. And that's it. Those are very common elements. And this is from the Wikipedia article of the crustal abundance of elements. And you can find them all here at the top of the list. Lithium would be at place 33, I think, along with nickel, something like that. As you can see, a lot of these elements are very high up. Also look at place 12, that is manganese, and manganese is a very popular choice for the layered oxides in sodium ion batteries in the cathodes here. Cost can be much cheaper, especially because the raw materials are so cheap. But it's not just the raw materials. The synthesis is also much cheaper because the layered oxides are ceramics. And if you know how to make ceramics, you know that you have to fire it at very high temperatures. And if you have a cup like this, the ceramic would have to be heated up at almost 1,000 degrees Celsius to make this into a ceramic. But for the Prussian blue, the temperatures you need is no more than the hot tea that I have here in the cup. And that I really need now. The cost is very low. The material cost is like a dollar or something like that. It's very, very low. And for the completed material, it's just a few dollars per kilowatt hour. In most batteries, the cathode is the most expensive part of the battery. In sodium ion batteries, it's not the cheapest part, but it's among the cheap parts. So the manufacturing is much more important. So if you can scale up your manufacturing plants to be very big and very cheap, then the batteries themselves can be very cheap. And that's how CATL wants to achieve like $30 or $45 per kilowatt hour. And that's quite possible, especially because the salts that you need and the electrolyte is much cheaper. And you don't need copper for the foils. And because the electrolyte is much more resistant to high temperatures, you can use higher temperatures for the drying process after you have coated the foils with your cathode and your anode material, and then it's wet and you have to dry it out, and you do that in long ovens, and the higher the temperature you can use, the shorter time is required, and the shorter and smaller your ovens can be. An important thing that strangely enough was brought up time and again by a lot of people who doubted this development is that, yeah, we have seen so many startups promising new technology. Well, CATL is not a startup. It's the largest battery manufacturer in the world. I don't know how these arguments even started. It's very strange. They have years of experience. They have support by the Chinese government officially, and they will not suddenly start lying about what they can do with their technology, especially because we know this technology. It has been developed years ago. We all know it's possible, at least if you read in the literature, and if you followed the old developments, you will have to get used to the idea that this is actually going to happen. It's not going to happen on a small scale. It's going to happen on a big scale because it's the biggest battery manufacturer in the world. So sodium ion batteries will come, and they will come in 2 years, and you better be prepared. Not like the people who are surprised by lithium iron phosphate these days. Okay, two slides. What's next? Next is the second generation that was announced. Will be about 200 watt hours per kilogram, similar to LFP. This is a similar performance to what Ferrarion is already demonstrating using layered oxides, but if you just exchange the Ferrarion's own anode materials with what CATL has announced, you already get to 200 watt hours per kilogram. So this is kind of quite realistic. The big question is what kind of layered oxide will CATL use? And they have said absolutely nothing on that. If there's nickel inside or not, nickel would be a bit more expensive. Most materials are dominated by manganese, though, so they should be quite cheap. But they are ceramics, so they need higher temperatures and processing costs quite a bit more. Okay, and after that, because I think the rumors are that CATL will announce the second generation this coming year in 2022. We will see. It's certainly quite realistic. The technology is not that far away because layered oxides have been demonstrated to be possible, and CATL has all the rest of it. So after that, what we will probably see is anode materials using pre-sodiation that can achieve higher capacity and also fewer losses in the first cycle. First cycle losses are typically about 10%, and if you can just reduce these losses by just putting more sodium in the first place, that would be great. And then you could also use these layered oxide materials that don't have enough sodium in the layered oxides at the beginning in doing construction of the battery. And then you could reach energy densities between 200 and 250 watt-hours per kilogram. And that would be very similar to what lithium-ion batteries have now. And of course, you can do solid-state batteries with lithium, a lithium anode. Just pure lithium anodes, but you need different separators. You can do the same with sodium and pure sodium anodes, pure sodium metal, and would be much better. You would get much higher energy density. But with sodium, it should be actually easier to achieve that. The problem is it's harder to achieve there if you don't get money to do it. And right now, all the money goes into lithium ion batteries. So it's from a practical point of view, it's much harder, even though from a physical point of view, it may even be easier. And in the future, we might see Prussian blue batteries with 250 watt-hours per kilogram, which is granted not that great. It's as good as some average lithium ion batteries these days, but it could be extremely cheap. Maybe that's a bit, these two slides were a bit of speculation. Okay, thank you. And I hand over to the Q&A. Hello?
Okay. Thank you very much for a nice talk, Frank.
Thanks.
There are a couple of questions.
Yeah, time was very
actually.
Short again.
Yeah, I realize that. Someone is wondering, is the biggest problem with sodium batteries their weight? And if so, isn't that irrelevant for stationary batteries such as used in grid scales?
Yes, exactly. That is, in fact, one of the reasons why a lot of people said sodium ion batteries will only be used for stationary storage. And that has become a bit of a meme, actually. And because people kept saying, okay, it's just for stationary storage and maybe some light duty vehicles, slow vehicles. People just kept repeating that and saying that. And nobody ever looked at the numbers. And at some point, you ended up with a situation where, the numbers are in fact just as good as the Tesla Model 3, and people still didn't realize it, but kept repeating the meme that that sodium is not good enough for cars. And yeah, yes, of course, stationary storage, absolutely, In a few years, people will look at lithium-ion batteries used for stationary storage as a bit of a waste.
All right, thank you. Are you aware of batteries with a lower density than water?
Lower densities than water, I wouldn't know, because that's kind of hard to do. Because you always need... I mean, lithium has half the density of water, okay, but you need to react it with something, and that something you want to react it with, that is kind of hard. You can, of course, always build a battery that's much lighter than water by putting a few battery cells into a container and make it airtight, and it has an average density that is lower than that of water. There are cathode materials that are made up of polymers, but you cannot, you don't have any sodium in those materials. You can put sodium in and have the reaction and so on, but those are polymer materials that are in research, might be quite cheap, but they have other challenges in using them.
Thanks. Someone is wondering where to start when planning to recycle electronic stuff and trying to bring the materials back to whoever needs it. Or is there some kind of a bay for materials?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that. What was the last bit?
Is there some kind of bay for materials? So some place where you could bring these?
Okay. Right now, it's not. The problem with recycling of batteries right now, especially lithium-ion batteries in electric cars, is simply that they are too good. Unless you crash the car, the battery will usually last until, as long as the car is running. And most of the lithium-ion batteries in cars are just working there in the cars. Some have been recycled, but it's a minority of the entire thing. So there are a lot of recycling companies that have been that didn't quite get into business because their business model said that there would be a lot more defective lithium-ion batteries than there actually are these days, and they want to recycle them, but they just can't find enough, and it will take a bit more time to get recycling, and will be similar with sodium-ion batteries. As soon as those batteries are actually available, as soon as the waste batteries are actually available, you will get to see some recycling going on, of course.
Thank you. And One Galactic Life from is wondering, and it is a bit far-fetched, but if that life form is remembering correctly, there was research on liquid batteries.
Yes.
And probably that is a better term for that. Did anything happen in that department?
I did read about this about 10 years ago. So I'm sure that something must have happened in that department, but nothing that ended up being commercially relevant. I'm just thinking about what kind of battery they meant. There are two kinds of liquid batteries. One where you had just two liquids on top of each other, and then that formed a battery, and you had a separator in between the two liquids, more or less. That's what I meant. The other is, of course, redox flow batteries. Most popular is vanadium redox flow, and the problem with vanadium redox flow is that it has a low voltage, and that means you need a lot of vanadium to store a given amount of energy, and it's just not very competitive in terms of the price per kilowatt hour. But there are some other developments also using sodium, also using other compounds in that direction. Whether or not they will be competitive, we have to see. I don't think that vanadium redox flow is competitive, even though some demonstration units have been built, but they're usually very small, and it's really just because they can get subsidies from it.
All right, thank you. And last question for this talk. Which batteries are better suited for bidirectional flows?
These are actually quite... they work in both directions quite well, also at high power. Usually discharge is a bit better than charging a battery, because when you charge a battery, You have to take care that you don't form pure metal and get metal dendrites that might penetrate your separator, especially if you don't have a separator material that is resistant to these dendrites, which normally it's just like a piece of plastic, porous plastic, polyethylene, like, you know, like a shopping bag or something, just much, much thinner and porous. And that can easily be penetrated, and you don't want that. So you have to limit your charging speed, especially at low temperatures, where this can happen quite easily. But other than that, it's pretty much, it's just fine. You can use them both directions at very similar powers.
Thank you.